The WLEW News and Public Affairs Department now presents What Do You Think? Here is your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. We have a couple of guests in the studio today. We have Huron County Sheriff Kelly Hansen, the Undersheriff Dwayne Miller, and we also have Ryan Schwartz. He handles a lot of the drug activity that goes on in the county, not personally. He tries to mop it up in the end. And we're going to be talking about a number of topics today as we do the program. So first of all, I'd like to thank you all for being here. One of the reasons I asked you to come in, Kelly, is I understand you've got some new things coming for your marine fleet. We're starting to think about fishing other than being cold and in a shanty. And with the warmer weather comes rougher waters, and you need the boats to help people.
Now we have a fleet of five, anywhere from 31 foot down to 14, and one of those is an airboat. What our boat projects are this year is replacing our airboat that was put in service in 1999. Was built for Everglades use. Wasn't really designed to be out on the ice like we've used it for. I would have to say the percentages of uses have probably been half and half when it comes to utilizing that boat. And another boat we're replacing is a 26 foot boat that I put in service back in 1988. We're replacing that with a 27 foot boat that is 2 foot wider.
You have several boats that are moored around the area in different harbors, and some of these boats you trailer because it's easier to get them fast to a location, especially like the airboat and that, where it's particularly needed.
The 31 foot boat is based in Port Austin. The 26 foot boat, soon to be the 27 foot boat, will be in Caseville. There's a 22 foot boat in Sebring, a 14 foot boat on a trailer, and then our airboat is on a trailer also kept in Caseville.
And you do this with those harbors and not Harbor Beach, because we have a Coast Guard station in Harbor Beach that's kind of covered. You don't need the redundancy. You get faster response if you've got them spread more evenly around.
Correct. Mac, when I started back in the 80s, we used to actually take a patrol boat over to Harbor Beach because they were a seasonal station. We would be there in the spring and we would be there in the fall. And then when they usually ran between Memorial Day and Labor Day, we would move a boat. Usually it was a Sebring boat that would be based over in Harbor Beach. And back then, too, Harbor Beach was a real hot fishing spot, too. There was an awful lot of traffic. Now that the Coast Guard's been there for several years, we'll get in there on patrols a few times a year, but we basically stay on from, I'm going to say, the majority of our patrol time is spent from Lighthouse Park down to the county line in the west side.
And when we think about boats, we kind of, if you own a boat, you kind of baby it. You don't want to bust it up. You, on the other hand, have to take it out in the worst weather. So is this a lot harder on a boat than and keeping the maintenance up on them than a normal boater would have to deal with?
Without a doubt, we've had to do extensive hull repair to the 26 foot that we're going to be replacing. That was used, that was our primary boat years ago. I myself had that out in 14 foot waves recovering a 38 foot sailboat. And that was a quite an ordeal, 12 miles northeast of Port Austin. That boat took a big beating, and it was fairly new then. And there's been other occasions, I don't want to say countless, but several, that it's went through. So yes, it's not when look to the west, because that's normally where the storms are going to come from. If it looks a little dark, start heading in. A lot of times that's when we were going out.
Now the boat that you are getting to replace it, I understand this is a similar deal as you got with your Humvees, and that it's a government surplus vessel that you were able to acquire, and basically just for the cost of transporting it here.
Right. It was a 200 and and step in, Dwayne, if, what, I'm sorry?
$247,000 when they bought it.
When the military bought it in 99. It's an older boat, but it was used in the San Francisco area, I believe, as an escort for ammunition transfers and what have you. The hull alone on that boat, when it, right now new, is $90,000 somewhere's in there, and we're into it for the cost of getting it hauled here.
And it's a commercial rated haul too, so it's built for the mission.
It's like your police vehicles. You get patrol cars that are called a police package, and they've got extra strength built into their frames and into the suspension and the engines and that, because they know you're going to be called upon to use it.
Correct. Yeah, it's cream in the crop. Let me put it to you that way. We could find boats a lot cheaper. There's no doubt about it. But for what we actually do, it's got a solid cabin on it. This time of year, you got to have something where you're out of the elements. And that same goes in the fall. So it's the kind of thing that we need, and we're putting the thing together right now, and hope to have it in service before July 1.
So it's on a fast track.
Correct.
And is this in San Francisco, or do you have a closer port to bring this back home?
No, the boat's home. Between doing some hull repair, like scrapes and some gouges and what have you, and putting brand new engines on it, we're going to put two 250 horse engines on it.
You've got it here in Huron County already.
Correct.
Wow. Yep. That is fast tracking
well,
it.
Well, we've been that project started back in February, wasn't it, Dwayne?
It was February 13th or 14th is when we found out it was ours.
That's the time of year, and really people in this area aren't thinking about boating anyway, and you just kind of got in on the ground and got it right up, scooped it up.
We lucked out is what it came down to, although we had quite a battle to get it here in some of the equipment that was cannibalized off it, but we're still in real good shape for what we're getting.
Are there things that... are going to have, you know, when you got your Humvees, you had to do some little modifications on it because they had places for gun turrets and everything else that you don't really need. Is there some modifications on the boat that way, or does it come pretty much stock the way you need it?
We're gonna have to take our electronics off of our boat we're replacing. But as far as any gun turrets or what have you on this, that isn't the case. But
it's not a battleship; it's more of a patrol boat. They used it for.
Okay. And it came without the motors. It was just the boat.
The hull, exactly.
Now, the equipment you had in Casewell, that was pretty state-of-the-art, if I remember it, wasn't it? You had, like, infrared and everything else on that boat?
That's actually on the Port Austin
That's
boat.
That's on the Port Austin
boat. That was up there, but we went through and re-equipped those boats in, 2010? When we put the Grady White in service, it has radar, a chart plotter, fuel management. We're not lacking on electronics compared to, back in the day where if you had a depth finder, you were doing good. I can recall going out to Charity Island at night, and you started to watch, took a heading up on a magnetic compass, and you started to watch for the bugs to get thicker around your all points lights, and you knew you were starting to get a little closer along with watching your depth finder.
That is old school, isn't it? So you've got the boat coming there. What about the airboat? Is this under similar circumstances, or do you find this elsewhere?
The airboat is a partnership with Tuscola County, and maybe that's not the right term to use or the right way to describe it, but emergency management deputy over in Tuscola County and Dwayne got working on this project back last summer.
Yeah.
And we do a lot of, we help Tuscola out an awful lot. Basically, if you look at the Sebwing River, if you're going down the Sebwing River on the south side of the buoys, that's actually Tuscola water. That's how close we are to Tuscola County in perspective. So we've got a real close relationship, partnership. And they were able to secure this $147,000 boat, which is a whole different platform from what we're working on currently. And I don't know what we're going to actually be into it, but I think it's going to be around $25,000 of out of pocket money that we're going to have to put towards this $147,000.
Majority of it's going to be covered by grant funds.
And a lot of the activity of the airboat comes along Saginaw Bay down towards Sebring, and then when you get into Tuscola County, anyone who drives 25 into Bay City knows that it's all shallow and places where you're not going to take a great big boat in there without losing a prop.
You don't get too close to the shoreline over there with a bigger boat.
But this will be able to skip in. It's not as tall as the airboats you had before that you're using now, which we all remember from the old flipper show.
Yep.
They were sitting way up high so they could see above the reeds and not hit an alligator or something. That not really a problem in the area here too much.
That's funny you should say flipper, because Kelly Levine back at the office has a picture of flipper on her desk there.
And this one is also not as open as that other one is.
No, this one will be enclosed. It's longer.
With a heated cabin.
Heated cabin.
I think when you rescue someone, they're usually hypothermic, and you need to get them warm, and the last thing they need to be is sitting in front of a great big fan driving back.
Regardless, the winds, you're moving, the wind's blowing by you. So we do have an exposure suit that we can put somebody in, but no matter what, it's cold.
But being enclosed is a good thing.
It makes all kinds of difference. We were out. It must have been in February. We were out off of Geiger Road. I shouldn't say we, because the two guys that were out there wouldn't appreciate them being referred to as sitting on shore and me being out there. I was in the car. They were out there. The boat operator did get extremely cold because it was a very cold night. This is going to make all kinds of difference, being able to be out of that element. They're dressed when they're out there. They're in exposure suits, but it's just when it's 10 degrees or below, and there's a 15 mile an hour wind, it's brutal. Without any sun, it's brutal. So this is going to make a big difference. And when, like Dwayne was referring to that, the hypothermia suit or bag, what we carry on the boat now, you have to get those the people that you're pulling out of the water or bringing in. You have to get them in there as quick as possible, because it's just brutally cold.
These little flipper type of airboats, they're also not made for the 3-4 foot chop we can get into shallow waters here. The Everglades doesn't seem to get that bad, and these things can be swamped if you look at them. There's a big open hull on them, and one good wave, and you're sitting there with a bucket real fast.
We recovered two gentlemen that were out on an airboat this past fall. That were out, it was a little windy. They did actually capsize their boat. I think they were taking on a little water to begin with that might have aggravated the situation, but they actually did capsize their boat, we went out. Our boat is unstable because of the higher center of gravity, as opposed to the newer one that we're getting. You'll be sitting lower to the bottom of the boat, as opposed to having that visibility.
And the new one, the hull's made for ice, not like the one we have now. It's thinner, and it doesn't have the bracing in it that the new one we're looking at getting does.
So it's like taking an aluminum skiff boat and just driving across the ice with it. It takes a beating,
yep,
and keeps on ticking.
Mm-hmm.
But will the higher height, though, does give you a little advantage finding people.
Visibility, yeah. That's about it. In the summertime, it's excellent. You get up, you're up in the breeze, you can see, but in the wintertime, that's totally the opposite.
We, when it comes down to choosing, we'll take the cabin in the lower center of gravity.
And you can never dress warm enough, I found that out over the years.
Even a dry suit doesn't help?
A dry suit will help your body, but if you wear a snowmobile helmet or something, there's always a pinhole, and wherever the wind gets it feels like you're getting stabbed.
Now, you've gotten some of this equipment from the government. You've gotten some of this equipment you're finding on your own. The Humvees and the whaler boat, those aren't the only things you've gotten, though, from the government surplus. This has been a pretty good program for you. We just only hear about the real big stuff.
Yeah, I mean Dwayne's gotten
a generator for our range, our firearms range, backup air tanks for the dive team. A copy machine, brand new copy machine in the box, never been used for the office.
This is all stuff the government bought and either never used or retired because they either had to use something newer or they had a five-year replacement plan on it or something and they had to buy new.
Just recent, one of the recent items, a $5,000 tool kit of hand tools, apparently enough that you could actually build a house or build something with. It appeared one tool, one actual tool, was utilized out of it. Well, the work crew now has possession of that, and they're using that.
And your cost is just getting it here?
Yep.
Either going down and picking it up or having it shipped?
Shipped. Guns, Humvees, we have a hydro seeder we got this year that we're going to use for the range. And the Row Commission will probably utilize that also. On Monday we got quite a unique vehicle. It's a pickup sitting up on a dump truck chassis. It's all-wheel drive, diesel engine, air brake system. I don't know exactly what we're going to use it for. We were thinking about incorporating it with the hydro seeder or we have an incident support truck, putting our cube box on the back of it, but it's actually going to be too high for that after we've gotten it here and looked at. But it's a piece of equipment that, like our boat, like their hydro seeder, that if we have it for a year, we're actually able to assign it to another municipality or some type of governmental entity, or we can sell it and the funds for it can be utilized for law enforcement purposes. Now, like the Humvees have to be turned back into the government when we're done with them for whatever reasons there are. I think the proper terminology is DMIL A and DMIL, right? Is that how that goes?
Because they were designed for military use, not general public use,
right,
per se.
If there's some sort of military secret or it doesn't meet a federal safety standard, which I think is the issue with those, they have to be turned back in. So just everybody...
Cost no prohibitive to put some airbags in that thing.
Yeah.
and these vehicles have 30,000 miles on them. This truck, so-called pickup truck that we got on Monday... that was an $85,000-$86,000 piece of equipment, new in 1997. It's got 37,000 miles on it. The air conditioner works on it. There's some rust issues and what have you, but that's a vehicle that, and I believe it was used to push airplanes around at an Air Force base in New York, was it? Someplace along those lines there, and it's hardly been used.
Maybe you can kick some butt when they bring the monster trucks up for the fair.
I'm telling you, there'd be a lot of fellows that would have some dreams of making this into a show truck if they had the opportunity. It certainly is unique.
So you guys are always out looking for stuff that you can utilize. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I'm sure the government has that really doesn't have any practicality for police departments.
And
we hear of some agencies buying, you know, basically armored personnel carriers and stuff. Really not a need for that up here. You got to kind of look for what you need so you get some value out of it.
It's a website-based program, and anything the military uses is on there. There's a category in there where you could request a nuclear sub. You're not going to get it, but it's on there. It's like a big Walmart for the military, anything they'd use, or you think of an Air
we
Force
could put
base.
We could put it at the harbor in Port Hope there, or Harbor Beach, and you'd have yourself some tours.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not only strictly... what you think is military equipment, anything they'd use on a base, it'll show up on there.
Like your copy machine.
You just got to know what to look for, and you can do a wish list and put in the right codes, and they'll even email you when it shows up on there, so you don't have to be on there every day to look at stuff if you don't want to. But
being prudent about these things, this is how you got wind of the boat right away and were able to get it, because, you know, early bird gets the worm and all that kind of stuff. You got to be right on top of it. Because the prime things are usually what pretty much a lot of people are looking for.
First come, first serve. There's some departments I heard in California that they got three guys and that's all they do is look for stuff on there, and they got semis and they'll travel around the United States picking stuff up. I think the one sheriff's office in California last year did over $3 million worth of equipment for their department, and that's all they do is look for the free stuff.
I think within our state, Oakland County, I think, is probably the biggest user of it. The state police have gotten a lot of think they've even got an aircraft off of there. And aircraft is available, but it like these Humvees, they come here in the military package, for the lack of better words, and you have to fabricate them and equip them for our use. Don't get me wrong, I drool over the aircraft that come available there, but it's one thing to fly them here and get them here, but to actually put them into serviceable condition or outfit them costs hundreds of thousands of dollars when you're dealing with stuff like that, and we just do not have the justification to be able to do it.
Well, the Sheriff's Department used to have a helicopter, utilize a plane. But there's all the maintenance on it. There's all the storage. It's got to be air certified all the time because it's a police used vehicle.
Back in the first helicopters that we got, we got two of them, as I recall. Those were military surplus helicopters. We were part of a cooperative with Genesee County, who I think got five of them. So all these helicopters come together. They were all put together, painted, equipped, and what have you. We had a justification back then. There wasn't cell phones. There wasn't GPS. Today, that's it. One of the reasons we got rid of the airplane we had is because we weren't flying it for what we had the need for years ago. Times changed, and we just couldn't justify the expense of having that piece of equipment anymore.
Well, the tech changes, and you've changed with it.
Yep.
I'm thinking about getting a drone. You could fly the shoreline. you're a pilot and everything. You could be the one doing it.
There's been a lot of debate and discussion and rule changes with them, but I don't see where we at this point have a need for it. We have if we need aviation, we have connections with the Border Patrol, the Air National Guard, and state police to have aircraft too. So at this point, I don't see where we would yet. Would we like to have that? I'm not going to lie to you. But it takes time, training, and we just don't have the need.
And that's the point of the program, is to get you things you need, not a wish list that's going to sit there and either that would have been rotting in the federal's storage rooms in yours. You want it to get put to good use.
Yep.
Okay. You have anything else on the horizon you're looking to buy or been searching for, or thing wish lists?
We're just. This pickup came as a spur of the moment, the truck we just recently got, so I don't know of anything that we're really looking for. We just kind of watch and see if we can come up with a fit for it. Office equipment, we're always looking for that. It's just wherever it's at. Ryan went to Cincinnati to pick some of that stuff up, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Columbus.
Columbus, was it? He went there and was... shocked and awed by the size of the buildings that housed all this surplus equipment. That a lot is still in the box. That you just, if you know what you're looking for, or have a real need. If it seems like if you stay at it long enough, you're going to come up with something that might not be brand new, but then you got to weigh out getting it home, depending on what you're getting.
Is the price of transporting it and versus new with a warranty and all other kinds of things fall into play?
Correct.
Okay. Ryan's here, and wanted to touch a little bit on the, if you could kind of move around and get closer to the microphone there. We were going to kind of talk a little bit about drugs in Huron County, not the kind you get at the pharmacy, but, some of them I guess are, but the illegal drugs that have been moving around here. We had a big bust earlier this week. Can't talk about that in particular. I know that's a pending court case, but in general, It's here, and it's been here, and it just kind of the faces change?
Sure. A lot of the names stay the same. I've got a pretty aggressive prosecutor office, and our judge has been being pretty aggressive and shipping them off to prison when they need to be. So we've been staying really, really proactive. The drug of choice has changed. Kind of goes...
We had the bath salts for a while, and there was a big focus on that because they just changed the formula a little bit, and it's no longer classified, and it's all over again.
Right,
that
the basalt
seemed to be kind of blanketed now, and now they're on to other things.
Right, and the basalts, that really was detrimental to the community. The gentleman, who we'll just call Robert, for sake of argument, north end of Baddocks there, it really was detrimental to the community. A lot of people got hooked on that bath salt, and this isn't the bath salt you get at Walmart that you put in your bathtub.
It's salts?
It's a synthetic drug similar to meth. They called it bath salt to sell it over the counter. And because it was a synthetic drug, the compounds on it were legal to sell. Huron County took a very proactive approach. I think we're the first county in Michigan to make it illegal, and that was through the local health department. And then the state of Michigan caught up a couple months later and made the one formula illegal. So all the chemists in China that were producing this stuff, they just changed the compound a little bit, and then it was legal to sell again. So then the state got proactive on it. Now I think there's about 400 different formulas that are illegal for the bath salt. And bath salt is pretty well non-existent right now in Huron County. There's still, they call it a Molly, is what the street name is. They say it's pure ecstasy, pure MDMA. But that's actually, they think they're taking ecstasy, but it's actually one of the 400 forms of bath salt. There's a little bit of that still around, but for the most part, bath salt is pretty well eliminated from Huron County.
It seems odd to me that people would put something in them that you have absolutely no idea what's in it. I mean, we know, but you know, if it's from a pharmacy, you may not know what's in it, but you know it's been tested, and what you're buying is what you're getting. But when you get into the drug scene, you don't know the potency, you don't know if they cut it with something that's going to either amp it up or hurt you in another way.
Yeah, a lot of heroin, most of our heroin comes from the Detroit area. And one of the cutting agents down there they'll mix fentanyl with it. And it's a deadly combination. And they have no idea what they're injecting into themselves. They think it's heroin and it could be fentanyl.
And why would they use something that's deadly? Does it give it an extra kick or,
yeah,
or
fentanyl is anywhere from 80 to 120 times more potent than morphine.
So they're combining two drugs into one.
Absolutely.
So you're getting a double whammy.
Sure. I've had people tell me, yeah, they thought the heroin was from China, and it was really good, you know, good strain of heroin, and it comes out to be fentanyl, not even heroin. They thought it was heroin, but it's not. So a lot of times they have no idea what they're injecting into their body. So after bath salts, we pretty well eliminated that. That was at the end of 2012. 2013 comes around, that's when meth started coming in, because they were addicted to this, so they needed their fix.
And they needed something to take its place.
Yes.
You eliminated the one cheap source, and they needed something else that, you know, they're foolishly thinking they can cook up in their garage.
Right, so in 2013, I think we started in February of 2013, we had 7 meth labs that we took down throughout the county.
For a small county, that's quite a number.
Absolutely, and prior to that, we never had one. There was never a meth lab ever in Huron County until bath salts ended. Then they started going to meth, and we took down 7 labs in 2013.
You make it sound so easy, but meth labs are notoriously dirty.
They're dirty, and hazmat
stuff and everything in it that can explode. All kinds of weird things can happen with this stuff. It's not as simple as just stopping them. You got to have a proper crew in to clean it up.
Absolutely. Lithium is one of the chemicals used in making meth.
You mean like batteries?
Batteries. Lithium from the batteries. And lithium reacts with water. So as soon as lithium hits water, it ignites. You could take a strip of lithium, throw it in a snowbank, and you can't put it out until the lithium burns off. Well, lithium, it's so sensitive to water. The one meth lab we had in Bad X, we had 3 fires that night due to the humidity in the air. Started the lithium in the garbage bags that they, when they were done with them, they just threw them in the garbage. The garbage bags ignited. We had 3 fires one night at the one meth lab. And this was a meth lab. It was in a house. It was a 2-story house. And in the bottom story was just a family, husband and wife with kids. And the meth cooks were in the upstairs apartment. The house was 2 apartments cooking this. So if we wouldn't have, you know, raided them that night, there would have been a fire at the house, and the people in the basement or in the lower level, they're an innocent family, and their house would have caught fire. So meth is very, very dangerous to cook. And that's one reason why the prosecutor's office, really with meth, there's no offers. You either plead guilty or we go to trial with it. You see Judge Pearl this past week sent a gentleman 8 to 40 years in prison, trying to make an example on meth. In 2013, like I said, we had the 7 meth labs. Meth, for the most part, anyone that was involved with cooking it got sent to prison. And then heroin started making a big comeback. And now, as you see, the rest we had last week, heroin is still here. We're still, you know, actively hitting, working it. But talking with some of the local drug addicts, they're saying it's a lot harder to get now than it was. So we have our thumb on it. It's here. It's going to be here. There's always going to be a drug problem. But at least we're making them nervous now, where they're looking over their shoulders and wondering who they can trust and who they can't trust.
And we're looking back to what we experienced back in 13, Tuscola is going through different meth phases, for lack of better words, and so is Sanilac, where they weren't dealing with it when we were.
So it's kind of like mosquitoes. If you spray here, they're still around.
We don't have
elsewhere.
A millage, though, for...
for spraying for meth?
Right, meth is... I mean, you give me $50 in 2 hours, and I can go to a local Walmart, buy everything I need, and within a couple hours, I can have you finished product. I mean, it is simple to make, and that's... And it's so addictive, and it's so dangerous. There's the byproduct afterwards. It's toxic, per se. I mean, you could take the finished byproduct, pour it on the dirt, and next year, nothing's going to grow there. And so when they're done with it, a lot of times there are these meth labs now. And when I say meth lab, it's not a big chemistry set that you'd think of with beakers. And a meth lab today is a Gatorade bottle. Everything it's the size of a Gatorade bottle, and pop bottle. That's it. So I was interviewing a couple of these suspects that were cooking meth that we arrested. And they were telling me, yeah, one time they thought the police were behind them. And meth makes you really paranoid. And they took their bottle and they threw it out the window. So now we got to think about that. When we have our garbage, the highway cleanup crews, when they're walking alongside the road, they pick up a Gatorade bottle. If it's, you know, got something in there that doesn't look like Gatorade, don't be touching it, because it very well could be a meth lab. It could be explosive, toxic to touch, dangerous to touch.
It doesn't break down over time. It stays pretty much...
It can go dormant, and if it's disturbed, it can start... rolling, what they call it, rolling again.
Yeah, there's the two bottles, without teaching the public
how to...
How to make meth, the second step in it has, like the undersheriff said, it can go dormant. 30 days later, you can grab it, and it'll reactivate. So it's very dangerous. Decades ago, police officers that were investigating meth labs, they're going in there without protective clothing, and they're all dying now of weird cancers. So when we go, if we see a meth lab, we get out, we call the fire department, we secure it, and then the meth response team, either from the DEA or the state police, will come up, and they have all the protective gear on, and they go in and they remove everything and they destroy everything.
And I imagine this is some of the things the court puts on as costs at the end, is the cleanup, because, or at least try to.
Yeah, they try to.
If there's any assets that they can go for, because a lot of times people who are doing this, their only concern is getting this. They don't have a lot of assets. They just want enough money to do it again.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of our, when the opiate addictions, whether it be heroin, prescription pills, meth, that's all their life revolves around, is getting their next fix. And that's, people steal from their own family members. And if they're not worrying about stealing from their own parents or grandparents, they're not worrying about stealing from the neighbors next down the road either. So they go down, they steal, they take it down to the pawn shops in the city, they trade guns right for the heroin. And keeping houses locked up, the chemistry of the thumb has changed in the last 10 years, that's for
sure.
Yeah,
I remember when people were up here I never lock my doors, or I don't take the keys out of my vehicle. We had that over the weekend, Sheriff, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
And that's all changed now. The big city has encroached. I guess while I've got you here, most law enforcement don't like it, so I guess there's this kind of push around the country concerning marijuana. You want to let people know about the bad effects that you see of it? Either of you.
Well, there's debate on both sides, pros and cons. I personally believe there's a reason why it's a Schedule I narcotic. I mean, I don't see a lot of good with it. Some of the people that are really, I don't say addicted, use it a lot. There's some very intelligent people that will talk a good claim or a good plea for its legalization. But there's also a lot of people that use that could do more with their lives. I'm bound by, as I'm giving my opinions, to aggravate somebody, Craig, but I would prefer not to see it be legalized, but it could very well happen. I see it as still a problem. The recreational use, the traffickers that are using it, these people are peddling it, I should say. Most of them don't have employment to speak of, because they're just that type of person that's living off of the system. Society allows that to happen. I prefer it not be legalized, but But that's just my opinion.
You see the damage recreational alcohol does, and you don't need any more in your plate.
Right. Last week, got marijuana wax, which doesn't fall under the Medical Marijuana Act. So they're, and it's so much more pure, this wax. There's candies that they make now, that marijuana candies that I have yet to meet somebody that has a medical marijuana card that actually falls into compliance with what the law says. The laws there allows them to possess, depending on what their card is, but, you know, upwards of 2.5 ounces of usable marijuana. And gentleman last week, he had a couple of bags of marijuana with him. It was locked up in the vehicle like it was supposed to, but he had marijuana wax, marijuana candies with it. He's in violation because that's not usable marijuana. And the wax is so much more potent. You know, the parents that are listening from the 60s and 70s, it's not the same marijuana. Now it's all the hybrid, the medical, the strains on it. They say 60-70% higher, more THC in it than what it was back, you know, in the 70s, per se.
THC is the chemical in it that...
That's the chemical that gets you stoned. That's what they want.
That so. They're all looking for.
Sure. So it's a lot more potent strain. You know, it's illegal now, and while it's illegal, we'll still, you know, we'll still battle it and work it. So.
And the medical marijuana law, is it kind of poorly done that it leaves a lot of gray areas? That
well,
you,
the issue is if somebody was trying to, if
I've
somebody
heard
was trying
where
to,
their stems were counted as weight or something, and it's all you know.
Stems can't be counted as weight anymore under some court rulings. However, there's no way of knowing if you have a medical for us to check. Do you have a medical marijuana card or we don't? We have no idea if you're in compliance if you have that card. The way the law is written, I just can't look up Craig Routson and see, oh, yes, he has a medical marijuana card. So if I hear there's marijuana growing in your house, there's no way for me to determine if you're even trying to be compliant with the act or if you're doing it, you know, illegally without following under the, without the medical marijuana card. So it causes confusion and with that. But, you know, there's case law that says even if we got reason to believe there's marijuana growing, until we know if it's everything's in compliance, you know, we can still get a search warrant for that. So until the law gets cleaned up, but it is, there's a lot of gray area, and it does make it very difficult.
And that's something Lansing has to address. You folks deal with it. You probably let them know what would help, but
well, the
they
law,
have to deal with it.
Realistically, the law was written by dopers. So that's the best way to... It makes really no sense whatsoever.
And that was Deputy Ryan Schwartz.
not Sheriff Kelly Hansen.
Yeah, but they're the ones that wrote it, and they're, you know, and the public passed it, and more power to them. So it, you know, that law's on the books, but there's a lot of confusion to go along with it.
Of the many search warrants we did that were dealing with marijuana, very few of those actually had anything to do with medical marijuana, or they had expired cards, which was a good indication. Or told me, anyways, that they had no business having those cards to start with.
Like I said, I've yet to come across someone that's actually in compliance. Now, the Michigan Supreme Court, there's actually two cases coming up that they heard, I believe, back in February on the medical marijuana issue that's supposed to clarify a lot of things. So the law is written very poorly, but at least the courts are trying to clarify, take a lot of the gray area out. And we have, a case right now pending in the court system. One of the seven felonies he's charged with is growing marijuana. And we're waiting to see what the state Supreme Court says. So,
no sense doing all the legwork and then getting it tossed out right at the end of the thing, Aaron, because the ruling came down.
Sure.
I understand that. We're coming a bit short on time here. If people are suspecting, smelling something from the neighbors or whatever, a lot of comings and goings in the middle of the night that you really can't explain, is there a number they can call? I know you've got a confidential tips line and such.
Facebook page, go ahead.
Yeah, everybody's on Facebook now. It's the Huron County Sheriff's Office Drug Task Force. Mm-hmm. Messages come in that. Actually, while we were here, I got a tip that my phone rang. It goes directly into my phone. You can leave a message on there. It goes directly to me. It's real time. That's probably the quickest way to get a tip going. They can still call dispatch at 641-269-6421. It's a non-emergency number. They know how to get a hold of me, and we're on call 24 hours a day, so drugs aren't just Monday through Friday, 8 to 4, so.
No, they're around, and I don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon.
It's here to stay, there's no doubt about it, but I know, and it's just not our agency, Craig. The other agencies in the county are working with us. We Ryan exclusively works drugs. And the other agencies don't have resources like that or have people that they can do that, but they provide help and assistance. It's not uncommon for them to for Elkton, by example, to come and help out with something going on in Caseville or what have you. Everybody's banded together in the village councils. And the city councils understand that we've made a lot of success.
And a lot of the local city councils are donating, helping us out with that too, where they're donating to our drug task force. Because, you know, when we're paying, you know, up to $100 for a tenth of a gram of heroin, that's pretty expensive. So we have to pay for that, and we have to wait to get reimbursed by after the court process. And you know, sometimes they pay $5 a month if they pay at all to get reimbursed. So a lot of the local municipalities are donating to us. We're hand in hand with Kevin Knobloch a lot. I said his name over the radio, so I wanted to make sure that I did that. But you know, the local police we were great with. So,
it's nowhere mean. It's been for you since you got into the drug end of the police business. An average officer on the road probably doesn't have all the background that you end up having with everyday experience with it.
Every day is different. There's no doubt about it. It's on the job training because you never know every day. I mean. Phone rings, you never know what it's going to be on the other end. So they're always coming up with different ways of concealing stuff. So,
well, appreciate you guys taking time today. Congratulations on the new boats that'll be coming. Hopefully, we'll get them in by the 1st of July, and they'll be here for most of the boating season.
The 27 foot we hope to have done by July, and the airboat we hope to have in service for the fall.
About the time you get a lot of calls for it.
That's normally when it's used.
Thanks for being out here today. Our guests today on the program have been Sheriff Kelly Hansen, the Undersheriff Dwayne Miller, and their drug specialist, Ryan Sports. And I do want you to stay tuned. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.